from WABE in Atlanta, this is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thank you for listening. This is our daily look at the arts and culture of Atlanta and the creative minds behind it. Today, we're finding art both in traditional venues and in places you may not expect. We'll talk with Melissa Folger, Clifton Guterman, and Tom Key from Theatrical Outfit about their production of Boy. We'll also hear from what may be the largest art gallery in town, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We'll find out what kind of art goes into a football stadium. And it's almost lunchtime, so what better time to talk to our own diva of delicious? Fall is the most beautiful time of year here in Atlanta, and many celebrations honor the season, particularly with food. Here to help plan ahead for those celebrations is Mara Davis. Mara D, the D being for Diva of Delicious herself.
Hi, Lois.
Welcome back to City Lights.
It's so great to be back. And can you believe it's fall, even though it doesn't necessarily feel that fallish just yet? But I want to know your feelings on something. How do you feel about pumpkin spice? Is it your thing? Is it overdone?
I think pumpkin spice is okay. I mean, you know, if it's in chocolate, it's certainly better, but I have no problem with it. I know this is a hot button item for you.
Well, it is and it isn't. So a couple of years ago, it used to make me crazy because it just got out of control. It's like, do I really need a Thomas's English muffin with pumpkin spice? Like, how far can we take it?
Yeah, candles and air fresheners.
That's right. So I became known as the hater of pumpkin spice. And now I feel like it's almost not cool to hate pumpkin spice anymore. So I've come around to like it again.
Because you are so influential.
That's right.
That the masses all hate pumpkin spice. So now you're moving back.
I'm moving towards it. I'm becoming a fan. I'm trying to turn things around. But there are fall festivals that will feature pumpkin spice, pumpkin beers, and everything that says the season. You know, Lois, Atlanta loves a festival. We are such a festival town.
Festivities are us. I think that should be the new emporium.
It's true.
So where do we begin? Is there anything today?
Well, today,
September 25th,
your episode of City Lights, of course. I'm so excited you're going to be talking about the art at Mercedes-Benz Stadium because it is a spectacular place to see art and an unexpected one as well. And the food at the stadium is spectacular.
Now we have it on the highest authority.
I'm very impressed with what they've done there, but that's going to be another segment for another time.
Right.
Let's talk about wine for a minute.
Toast.
Now, here's something that's happening on Monday tonight. This is going to be a big wine night, and it's tied in with Taste of Atlanta. Now, you know, Taste of Atlanta is kind of the Mac Daddy of all the food festivals, and I'm going to get to it in a minute, but they're having a sommelier competition tonight, which is like, wait, what? What? But yes, so they're going to be judging them on their tastes and their skill, and there's a dinner, there's a pairing dinner. Sounds like it's very, like, you know, fun and wine, and I'm into this.
Yeah, well, so just 3 days into fall, you can raise a glass and toast the season at City Winery in honor of the sommeliers. Now, can we get cheesy?
I love cheese. I do.
Liz Lemon, one of my idols, my great idols of all time, you know, she would subscribe to a cheese of the month, maybe cheese of the week club, and we have cheese festivals coming up.
We do. Now, we just missed the one that was over the weekend. There was a very big Atlanta Cheese Festival, but don't worry because there are more. There's the Grilled Cheese Festival, and that's going to be happening at Old Fourth Ward Park with some feature restaurants, Sun in My Belly, Palookaville, The Highlander, Three Sheets, and Bantam Pub.
You had me at Sun in My Belly.
I know. We love it. Hi, Max, at Sun in My Belly. Yes, we love we love them. the Grilled Cheese Festival, and then in Edgewood on that same day, October 7th, there's going to be the Mac and Cheese Festival. What are your feelings on mac and cheese, Lois? Do you like it straight up? Do you want lobster? Do you want truffle? Bacon in it? How do you like it?
Well, I'm allergic to shellfish, which limits things for me, but I like it so it's really creamy and smooth.
I like it too, but I like a nice, when it's crusty on the top and a little burnt. I like a little burny.
See, you're the gourmet.
That's not gourmet. I like it. Well done. But this is with the Edgewood neighborhood. It's their second annual, and it's a nonprofit festival, which I love. So it's longtime residents in the neighborhood. They're giving back to neighbor in need. So this is a great cheesy festival for a terrific cause. So I'm down with this, the Mac and Cheese Festival.
And then we're already halfway into October with the next Chocktober Festival.
Well, this is tied in with the Marietta Beer Festival, and beer festivals are just so great. And I have a couple of them that I want to talk about, but the Chocktoberfest I think is so cool because not only can you try like over 100 beers, I mean, forget about it, the Pale Ale, IPA, Stout, you name it, but they also have this competition where people are doing art with chalk. And they have all levels of it. So there's kids that are doing it, but then they have master artists from all over that come in and they do these incredible chalk drawings. So so the more beer you drink, the better the art looks. Right? Don't you think?
I think it's a wonderful way of bringing art and beer together and celebrating the season.
Well, yeah. It is called craft beer. So
there
it is an art. It's not just, you know, there's something to be said for that. And then we have so many terrific local breweries in Georgia. So it's a great place. And I also like the idea of Marietta Square. I think it's a I don't want to say it's an underrated gem, but it is a gem.
It is charming and more people should visit.
Agreed.
I agree. If you're just joining us, this is City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. We're here with Merritt Davis, the diva of delicious. And we'll be back with more on fall food festivals after this break.
Support for WABE comes from Comcast Business, committed to providing dependable internet service for businesses who depend on it. Comcast Business, internet, voice, and TV. Built for business. And from the Atlanta Botanical Garden, where you can see nature in a whole new way during the Curious Garden. This unique exhibition, presented through October 29th, features a dozen surprising displays designed to make you stop, think about, and talk about plants, gardens, and nature like never before. For details, visit atlantabg.org.
Back with City Lights on WABE, where ATL meets NPR. And if you haven't yet met Merritt Davis, here she is, our diva of delicious. We've been talking about fall food festivals in Atlanta. The big one is a month from now.
It is a big one, and I've been to it many years. I can't believe that Taste of Atlanta is 16 years old. I remember when it started, it was a tiny, Taste of Atlanta. First of all, it's crazy to think that it is only 16 years old, that we didn't have a festival. You know, you think of like Taste of Chicago, it's probably going on 50 plus years. So ours is only 16 years old, but they've moved it this year. It's going to be in Old Fourth Ward Park. It's 3 days. And they have so many different levels of Taste of Atlanta this year, but there are tons of restaurants that are involved, over 90 of them. They have the big kickoff on Friday night, and then Saturday and Sunday they have the tasting tents, and they have cooks demos, and they have, you know, entertainment, and some exciting restaurants that are going to be a part of it, Lois. Better Half, which is a great restaurant that I'm excited about, that more people should go to. Rising Sun in Avondale is a restaurant that everybody should go to for breakfast or lunch. And they're going to be there. Hattie B's Fried Chicken is going to be a part of this. Now, Hattie B's is well known in Nashville for their Nashville hot chicken.
And we're talking hot.
They do it a couple levels of hot. Yeah. I mean, how hot do you like it, Lois?
Not terribly, but I like a little kick.
I know you do. So Hattie B's is going to be there. And no, Hattie B's isn't open yet. It's in Little Five Points. I actually drove by there the other day, and it looks like it's just forming its location. So I think a lot of people are going to be very excited about that. But that is happening October 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. This is the Sweet 16 of Taste of Atlanta, and you get to try that brand new Nashville fried chicken.
I hate to even bring it up, but what happens if it rains?
It goes on.
People, rain or shine.
I mean, you'll still eat in the rain. Right?
I will eat in the rain. I have been known to eat in the snow.
It doesn't matter.
Whatever temperature, I'm up for eating.
Yes, there have been many of I've emceed. And unfortunately, I can't emcee it this year because it's my high school reunion.
Your 10th.
That's right. I don't want to say what year it is. But it's a big one, and so I can't be there. But I know I highly endorse it because it is a great event, and I always think that they're doing great things to innovate the festival. And with their new location, I think it'll be really, really fun.
Yeah, I like that it is outdoors and in a great neighborhood. Do people have to buy tickets to attend the festival?
Yes. If you go to their website, there are different levels. You can do VIP, you can do the regular, you can do, you know, certain events. So it pretty much spells it all out for you. So I think that is a lot of fun. And, you know, you just wear your stretchy pants that day. You know, may elastic, like don't eat. And it's so hard too, because there's just so many different things to try. So my strategy of a food festival.
Yes.
Is I think you should go, you got to do your laps around, and you evaluate what you want to try. And you always have to get to a food festival early because, you know, people will run out of food. You don't want to be showing up towards the end.
No.
You got to get there, you know, on point. Don't mess it up, Lois.
I will try my best because okay. I like it when it's fresh and abundant.
I know you do.
All right. There are beers to celebrate throughout the year because, you know, we have such an incredible craft brewery culture here now. But fall, I mean, you know, since like 18th century, who knows, medieval Germany, fall was always the time for beer. And would you say that this is the greatest concentration of beer fests this time of year?
I think there are just more beers. And now with all the Georgia beer laws changing and the state is finally getting with the times that you can make money off beer and that it's a beautiful thing, I think more people are getting involved in Georgia's craft beer community. And the Decatur Beer Festival is one that has been around for a while. And, you know, you can find so many great breweries like Three Taverns, Wicked Weed, Jekyll Brewing. I'm not even scratching the surface here, but it makes sense that this Decatur one is so special because the Brick Store, they're celebrating their 20th anniversary, and that is the core of Atlanta's beer culture. They really know how to do it right. And when you go to that beer festival, you got to go to the Brick Store and get that pretzel. That pretzel, it comes with pimento cheese. It comes out warm and fluffy. And it is just, I mean, it is the perfect thing to have with beer.
You know, I think it would be a wonderful idea to come up with a contest for best brewery names. You know, just like, you know, like rock bands. I mean, there are some really creative names. And along with that, the label, some of the designs are just so beautiful or clever or attention getting.
Maybe we can do a fundraiser for your listener-supported WABE. Maybe we should do a whole thing about it. Get a brewery to do a Lois Reitzes beer.
Well, I certainly would go along for the artwork on the labels. I'm always intrigued with how people come up with those things.
Well, people judge a can like, you know, a cover, kind of like a book, too. I mean, that has attracted me to certain beers. But then again, I am just generally attracted to beer.
You're generally attracted.
As are you, Lois. October 21st, the Decatur Beer Festival. So check that out. And then there's another Georgia Craft Beer Festival, October 25th at Candler Park. But I know we have to wrap up soon, but the Chomp and Stomp. That is the chili festival I want to talk about in Cabbage Town.
Which cheese compliments so magnificently.
It does. It does. And this is a big one, too, because they have restaurants that are making the chili, and then they have regular teams that make chili. And then they have a run, the Romp and Stomp, and they have a lot of bluegrass music. It's just so much fun. It's been going on for a while, and I like these little community festivals, and the Chomp and Stomp is one that, like, I mean, has gotten wildly popular.
Yeah, well, food brings everyone together.
It does. I mean, look, you've got a dictionary here. Lois has her laptop on a dictionary. I was like, why did you bring it in? I thought she was going to like pull out some big word. And since we're doing a food segment, 16 new food words have been added to the dictionary, including sriracha and froyo. So it's not in that dictionary, but...
And yet, froyo has been on the decline.
Soft serve ice cream is now like the in thing.
Okay, is it beyond gelato?
I mean, there's so many levels of frozen delights that we're just going to have to save this for the next segment, Lois.
Let's do it. Mara Davis, our diva of delicious, wears many hats, one of which is fond WABE contributor and friend. Mara, thank you so much.
Lois, thank you.
Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting?
Support for WABE comes from Stitch Fix, an online personal styling service for women and men. After clients fill out a style quiz, a personal stylist handpicks pieces that ship straight to their door. More at stitchfix.com/Atlanta. And from the Alliance Theater, presenting Crossing Delancey, the hilarious heartwarming play that inspired the hit film about an overbearing Bubby and her headstrong granddaughter at the MJCCA, October 7th through November 25th, alliancetheater.org.
This is City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. The new Mercedes-Benz Stadium is not only home to the Atlanta Falcons and Atlanta United, it is also perhaps the largest art gallery in the city. We spoke with Penny McPhee, the president and trustee of the Arthur M. Blank Family Foundation, and John Paul Rowan, Vice President of SCAD Atlanta, excuse me, SCAD Savannah. That's SCAD Savannah. We began, perhaps in the most obvious place, why put art in a stadium to begin with?
At a philosophical level, art is a pillar of the Arthur M. Blank Family Foundation programming, and it's important to the Blank family because we believe that, like sport, art can bring people together, diverse people together. It can lift their spirits. It can cause conversation and dialogue in a way different from almost any other means.
And I know the Blank Foundation is investing into the neighborhood surrounding the stadium. Is any part of that investment art related?
It is. So we've commissioned several murals on the West Side and are continuing to work with artists who are working with the communities, with the residents, to decide where they want murals, what they want those murals to be, to bring local artists in to work with children and communities to provide art. So it definitely is a centerpiece of what we're doing there.
Please give us a refresher, if you will. Give us a refresher about the SCAD and Mercedes-Benz Stadium partnership.
It started fortuitously because we knew that we wanted a stadium filled with art and that we wanted art that reflected our fan base, art that represented artists from all over the world, a variety of medium. And there were really only several art consulting firms in the country who had ever done a stadium before. And they just weren't a fit for us. We knew we had a vision that was different from other stadia. We didn't want just sports memorabilia. And we didn't want the kind of collection that Dallas has. As wonderful as the art is in the Dallas Stadium, it didn't fit our values.
What sort of art do they have?
They have very few and number of pieces of art, but their art didn't really, I feel like, take into consideration the end users of the facility. When we started this process, Penny and Arthur and the rest of the art committee that was formed for this project really had the fans at the center of the goal. It was not an art piece, an art collection just to satisfy Arthur or one of his family members, but it was really a collection that's meant to be supported by the fans themselves, by the users of the stadium. And so one of the first things that we did upon starting this project was go and speak to the fans. We actually ended up interviewing well over 1,000 fans.
You're talking fans or subscribers?
Well, actually, we went to Falcons games and spoke to fans there. We interviewed the Falcons Fan Council, but also spoke to the Atlanta United preseason ticket holders about what did they want to get out of this experience. What did they want to get out of the artwork there? What types of artwork resonated with them? And so we built the collection based around the knowledge of the fans and the knowledge of what they would find interesting. And so far in the events that they've attended, the response has been overwhelmingly positive that this work is really resonating with them. It's not meant to be as maybe stoic as a museum would be. It's meant to be a much more kind of inviting experience, and that certainly was the intention from the start, and I think we've been successful in completing that given the response from the fans so far.
I'm picturing you interviewing fans at games and thinking this gives new meaning to crowdsourcing.
Yes.
And we knew, Lois, from the beginning that the art had to reflect and support the iconic architecture of mm-hmm. the stadium. But we also wanted to use it to give wow moments, surprises to the fans, because that's part of our fan experience.
When we interviewed fans, we actually found fans that were attending the games from Tennessee, from North Carolina, from South Carolina, from Florida, from Alabama, from Mississippi, and from Georgia. And so we wanted work that would, again, represent who they are. And as international and as global of a city as Atlanta is, as it is certainly one of the business and economic and creative hubs for all of the U.S., we wanted this collection representative of that. So we have a large number of internationally renowned, but also artists that are based around the world. The iconic Falcon sculpture itself is by an artist who's from Budapest, Hungary. And we have, you know, work that is resonant here in Atlanta with some very famous artists like Radcliffe Bailey that are based here in Atlanta. So we wanted the work to really represent as global of a community as our will attend the stadium itself and Atlanta as is.
So after you talked with fans, did your crowdsourcing amongst many cheers, I would think, did you then commission an artist with some of the suggestions from fans? How did you go about curating the art?
Certainly. So we showed examples of previous work to the different fans and had them select and rank all their favorite types of work from a series of different questions. And what came out of that was a passion for word art, a passion for art with bright colors, and a fashion for art that had a lot of strong imagery in it. And I think a couple of pieces that you can see that really speak heavily to that foundation. There's one which is a quote from that an artist Michael Porton created, and it's a quote from Hill the Elder that you'll have to see when you first walk in to the stadium. It's a beautiful piece that's on the wall there. And it turns out actually that Arthur carried the same quote around in his wallet as he was starting his business.
John Paul, you mentioned that massive Falcon sculpture out front of the stadium. What were some of the more challenging pieces to install?
Well, certainly the Falcon was a very complex piece to install. But each piece had its own unique challenge, I would say. One piece that I really am partial to is by an artist named Nari Ward, who created a piece that says One Voice. And it's actually made up of 9,000 pairs of shoelaces. And so attaching and fixing 9,000 pairs of shoelaces to a wall and spelling out One Voice is definitely had some challenges to it. But I also love that that piece, the shoelaces were collected actually by all different age level athletes throughout the state of Georgia. So we, through the Blank Foundation, were able to reach out to different, all the way down to lower school, middle school, and upper school, football teams, soccer teams, basketball teams, and really any type of sports. They could donate their shoelaces to be part of this piece. And at the same time, we went out to the actual Atlanta United players and the Falcons players, and even some of our SCAD sports. We have a lot of sports at SCAD, and we had our SCAD bees donate their shoelaces. So it really was a community-driven project.
Well, another piece that engaged the community, so it's mm-hmm. one of my favorites because it brought children into the process, is a piece by the Ladd brothers, who are from Brooklyn, young, dynamic duo. And they brought together children from the Boys and Girls Clubs around Metro Atlanta. The kids actually painted beads that were about the size, a little bigger than a baseball, I would say. Yes. And then the brothers created the final artwork with the beads that were produced by the children. So it engaged a huge number of kids, and now we're bringing them to the stadium to actually see what they accomplished, and their little bios are part of the description of the piece.
Will they get to see a game?
I certainly hope so.
Going forward, will art continue to be added to the stadium? Is this a permanent collection? Or will galleries be updated?
We were actually talking earlier today about going back through the building now that it's open and seeing where collectively we think there might be some additional opportunities. So certainly I think the collection will continue to expand and grow and change to keep it feeling fresh and new.
One big new piece that will come next year, about mm-hmm. this time next year, can't be installed until after the Georgia Dome comes down. But it's a gigantic reflective soccer ball reminiscent of the Bean in Chicago.
That just came to mind when you said the reflective.
And it should be like the Falcon. It will be an outdoor piece, and it should be a wonderful photo opportunity and just a wonderful place to celebrate the Atlanta United team. So that piece has already been commissioned, but we see opportunities within the stadium to grow the collection.
Art should be something that everyone appreciates, that everyone should find joy in. And I think that we've been able to work together and put together a collection that really is representative of the people of Atlanta, is representative of the individuals who will be coming and viewing the stadium. And I think the work will really resonate with them when they come through. So I hope they come as many times as possible to see the work and every time they go into a new space and see a new piece.
The collection really is one of the largest art collections in the Southeast, and it's open to the public. So folks will be able to see it at games, Atlanta United games, at Falcons games, at concerts, but they will also be able to come into the stadium on tours and see the entire stadium, and then we're working on an art tour. So that will be an opportunity for residents, visitors to Atlanta. We're excited about that.
That was Penny McPhee of the Blank Family Foundation and John Paul Rowan of SCAD Savannah. You are listening to City Lights on WABE, where ATL meets NPR.
Support for WABE comes from Taste of Atlanta, a three-day food, beer, and wine experience, October 20th through the 22nd at 4th Ward Park in Old 4th Ward. Taste from 100 restaurants, cooking demos, music, and more. Tickets at tasteofatlanta.com.
Join WABE and PBA 30 for an exclusive opportunity to get up close and personal with one of the most honored storytellers of our time. Acclaimed historian Dr. Henry Louis Gates will discuss his life and career and share a behind-the-scenes look at the Finding Your Roots television series. Sunday, October 1st at 5 p.m. at the Carter Center. For tickets and more information, visit pba.org/gates or call 678-686-0335.
We're back with City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for listening. Theatrical Outfit continues its season of conversation-starting plays with Boy. This time, the conversations focus on gender and love of other people and ourselves. We have the play's director, Melissa Folger, along with actors Clifton Guterman and Tom Key, who is also the artistic director of Theatrical Outfit. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Lois.
Boy is based on a true story. What happened?
You take that one?
Well, Boy is based on the David Reimer story. The Reimer twins were twins in Canada in the 60s, and they were both born boys. One of the boys was damaged in circumcision as an infant, and the medical community and the psychiatric community advised that family to raise that child as a girl. And the child was raised as a girl until age 15, never being told anything else, though he felt something was different about him, then at 15 was told the truth and decided to reclaim his original gender as male, give himself a new name, and then live life as he was meant to be and how he started life as a male.
So Adam ends up being raised as a girl. Adam is the character in the play. Because of a suggestion from a doctor. Tom, you play the role of the doctor, Wendell Barnes.
That's correct.
Why did he think this was a better option?
His logic at the time, and this was decades ago, but his logic at the time was that it would be better to, because of the possibilities surgically at the time, he thought it would be more successful to raise her as a female, to raise him as a female, not tell him. His plan was that he should never know that he was born a boy. And his logic was, let her live as a whole person as opposed to an incomplete boy, which could do irreparable damage to the psyche.
And of course, so much has changed since the 60s when this all occurred. The play jumps between time periods. Clifton, what's it like going from portraying a young girl to an adult male?
Well, it's wonderful. It's the role of a lifetime, and it's a great challenge for me as an actor and all of us as a team. Our play is based on that story we just talked about, but the playwright has set it in America, change names, and in the present day in our play, you meet Adam as a young man after all of these chapters of his life, trying to date a woman for the very first time, having been brought up, being trained how to be one. And that's what makes our play so interesting, is that you see the courage that he has to do that. And we do go back in time to many therapy sessions with him when he was, in our play, named Samantha, and you see Samantha over several therapy sessions with her psychiatrist, Dr. Wendell Barnes, who Tom plays. So we get to see her evolve as she's trained how to be a girl and how that works okay for a little while, and then how it starts to disintegrate when her true biological gender shines through more. And you see the experiment start to begin to not work, and her to reclaim who he really was, and eventually break away from that and rename himself. He chooses in our play to rename himself Adam after the first man in the Bible. And it's just an amazing story that jumps back and forth in time, and you see him with a girlfriend in his life, and the humor that that creates, and the awkwardness and the joy of trying to be himself after several chapters of not being allowed to do that.
Melissa, as a director, how did you approach this story? I mean, it tackles serious themes, and yet there's a fair amount of humor in it as well.
Well, I mean, we really did a lot of research. Clifton did a lot of research on David Reimer to understand what was going on at the period, understand where issues of gender, trying to understand gender and what it was in the 60s and 70s. And we did a lot in that period. We also spent a lot of time really working through the chronology of each storyline, because the way the play is structured, it moves back and forth. We really wanted to make sure that we were telling a truthful story that progressed. So as we were working, we really spent some time looking at, you know, at this age, what was happening at this age, what was happening, and moving forward. We approached the humor. We want to make sure that it feels really light because we ended up having, we have so much darkness and sadness that can come along with it too. Sure. We wanted to make sure that it was lifted and light in places too, and to find those connections and the relationships with his family and with his girlfriend to allow us to feel that hope at the end of the play.
How do you achieve that, going from the adult Adam to the young girl Samantha? Do you put on a dress and wear a wig?
Well, we'll leave a little of that as a mystery for the audience. I hope everyone will come. But a lot of it is done with voice and body work.
Yeah.
We do. There are some tricks of the show as I transition out of one scene as adult Adam back in time to Samantha at various ages, 6, 7, 11, 12. We do assist me in a couple of small ways, but most of it is voice and body, and the text from the playwright really helps. The language of a child, the awkwardness of a child, the questioning of a child, and she really did. Anna Ziegler, this wonderful playwright, she explored the true case. She looked at transcripts of the therapy sessions. There's a beautiful biography of the real boy called As Nature Made Him, the boy who was raised a girl. So a lot of his own words about what happened in those sessions are out there, and she incorporated a lot of those into the script. So what I'm saying as a young girl is very close to what was said in those sessions. They were also recorded. And so it does help to speak as a child when you're actually seeing and using words of a child.
The psychiatrist sessions were recorded?
They were.
With the knowledge of the parents?
Yes, yes. And sessions were recorded with the parents as well. One thing that attracted me to the text, to choose it as artistic director, was the skill of the playwright, Anna Ziegler, in taking us through this hard topic, because on a very deep level, the choices that we're faced with when something happens over which we don't have control, and the choices that the psychiatrist makes with intentions of being helpful, the choices that the parents make, that the character that Clifton plays ultimately. In the first scene, we meet him as a young man at a party with a young woman. And in the next scene, before that even ends, you hear me saying, "Samantha, can you come sit down now?" And the next scene, in just a few seconds, Clifton has become a six-year-old girl. And it's a has a kind of a thriller aspect to it, a thriller story about identity and the importance of identity.
If you are just joining us, I'm Lois Reitzes here with Melissa Folger, who is directing Theatrical Outfit's production of Boy, along with actors Clifton Gooderman and Tom Key, also directors themselves. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support for WABE comes from Live Nation, welcoming Alison Krauss and David Gray for one night at Chastain Park Amphitheater this Saturday night. Tickets on sale now at livenation.com. Alison Krauss and David Gray together at Chastain. And from the Atlanta Area Association of Independent Schools, which provides avenues for collaboration for its 70 members. Learn more about AAAIS schools, including a calendar of open house events at aaais.org.
The news can shift on a dime.
In his statement on Twitter, President Trump said that the military...
Senate must rejected legislation to dismantle Obamacare by...
To date, Red Cross in Georgia has deployed 52 workers to Texas and Louisiana.
When it does, All Things Considered reports what we know and we chase after what we don't. We take the time for another question to look ahead and get at what the news means right now. Stand with the facts. Listen every day from 4 to 6:30. It's All Things Considered here on 90.1 WABE.
You're listening to City Lights on WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes here with Melissa Folger, who is directing Theatrical Outfit's production of Boy, along with actors Clifton Gooderman and Tom Key. We hear from some transgender people that the sex they're born with does not reflect the gender they actually identify with. In this production, though, a man born as a boy, then raised as a girl, actually does identify as male, and that doesn't necessarily deny the first scenario where transgender folks don't identify how they were born. But in this case, the decision was made for Samantha slash Adam. So what is the play saying about nurture nature here?
Oh, wow. That's a deep question. It really is saying that inside you know who you are, no matter who you are, and that people can try to push you in a different direction, be it if you're transgender, intersex, but that ultimately you are the only person who knows who you really are, and you have to claim that. And that's what Adam's able to do, and to claim his life back, which I think is what's so hopeful about it, is that we all know inside, we at least try to discover who we are over the course of our lifetime, and to really find that moment where you know yourself the best and say, this is who I am and I'm taking this for myself. And Adam does that.
Well, Melissa, this is very heartening because, you know, at first blush, mm-hmm. particularly with what you're telling us about the psychiatrist's mm-hmm. role, which has nasty echoes of, you know, therapists who tried to cure people mm-hmm. of being gay. At first blush, it could seem like an argument for nature. Mm. But what you're saying is we know inside who we are. And I think that's a powerful message. Theatrical Outfit's mission is to spark conversations that are meaningful to its playgoers. Even before the audience weighs in on this show, what conversations arose from the cast?
Lots of conversations.
Where did you begin?
Well, I think, and also off of what you just said, I mean, I've had a lot of people ask me about this play. I actually have, when I've gone to my own personal doctor, they knew of the original case. I have had a lot of people who are asking, is it a transgender play or isn't it? And I think what's interesting is how many people can identify with this play for numbers of reasons. And what you just said is that it is about a person, a young child who had a choice made for them and then realized or was told the truth later in life and reclaimed something for themselves and reclaimed their original gender. But will the LGBTQ community identify with it? Will the straight community identify with it? And I think so, because it is about listening to our children. It is about knowing who you are on the inside. And if you have always felt like you are an other, eventually reaching a point where you love yourself, where you're able to have love from the outside, where you're able to reconnect with family and have them love you. And I think all of us can identify with that, no matter how we identify gender-wise or sexuality-wise. And I think it's just a beautiful story for everybody. Because we can all have trauma in our life, or we can all have something happen to us that we didn't expect or didn't ask for, and it's how we journey through that and who we are on the other side that I think makes humankind beautiful, is that we have the capacity to weather huge, huge storms. And sometimes when you can come out of it on the other side, and know yourself better, and the people in your life can know you better, then that's a great thing. Even if it was very, very hard to get there.
I think that there's a tremendous element of surprise to the story for those who we did a reading of it at our unexpected new play reading festival last year, and there was a lot of surprise of what people thought the play was going to be and then what it turned out to be. One of the reviews of the play said, when you leave, you won't be thinking about gender, you'll be thinking about humanity. And of the legions of topics that have been discussed, and I think that will be discussed, one is that even though what most of us consider the primary signal of masculinity, even when that is destroyed, when the body is violated, the human spirit can claim what the human spirit is in that individual, the evolution of a person. And I think, secondly, the courage of the parents to finally confess after years to the child without the psychiatrist's permission, that this was the truth. And how any experiment or endeavor or effort or initiative that is sealed in secrecy, there is some kind of psychic universal transaction cost that is going to have to be repaid at some point. And to see someone transcend through that.
Tom, in playing the psychiatrist, Dr.
Yes.
Barnes, do you feel like you're the villain?
If I ever judge a character that I am playing as the good guy or the bad guy, I can't simultaneously portray a character and judge that character at the same time. And that is part of the mystery of the craft of acting. And it's a great, I think it's part of what it is about being human, reserving judgment. And I think he makes a terrible, tragic mistake. And I have my own version of what happens to him after that. He is the loser in this story, and in my own personal, I think there's kind of a, you know, when we hear that there was a character who married his mother and killed his father. We think, oh, what a terrible person. I would never do that. And through the mystery of the dramatic craft, and when we watch Oedipus, we think, oh my God, that could happen to me. And there's a sequel to Oedipus, and that's Oedipus at Colonus when he finds redemption. So my hope is that at the end of this play, when the consequences of what he has done reach up to him, that there will ultimately be hope for him. And I think for all of us in those decisions we've made, that I have certainly made, that I have to learn from my mistakes.
The play opens with Adam flirting with a girl at a party. As you mentioned, he's a grown man, he has a girlfriend. Ultimately, how does the play address the way in which love and gender affect relationships, Melissa? We don't have much time left,
sure.
But I was hoping you could address that.
Yeah, I mean, they have to find their own way. He does. He's not a typical man. He doesn't have. He knows how to connect emotionally. He learns how to connect emotionally over the course of the play, and he can't really talk about what happened to him for a long time in the play. And when he does and he opens up and is honest with his girlfriend, that's when they really are able to connect in that way. But they try. They try to connect emotionally. They try to connect sexually. And how does that work for someone who has had such a horrific event happen to them? I think that's the struggle that they're going through, is how do they define their relationship based on the two bodies and the two humans that they are in the play.
Melissa Folger is the director of theatrical outfits production of Boy. We've also been speaking with actors Clifton Guterman and Tom Key, who is also the artistic director of theatrical outfit. Boy opens September 28th and runs through October 15th. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Support for WABE comes from Nissan of Noonan. Nissan of Noonan, a fresh approach to the car buying experience. Their number is 844-FRESH-15. Online at nissanofnoonan.com. And from the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, presenting Otello, Saturday, October 7th and Tuesday, October 10th in Atlanta Symphony Hall. Tickets are on sale now at ASO.org. Classical series presented by Delta Airlines.
You've been listening to City Lights, a celebration of the arts and the ways in which we express ourselves creatively. Catch an encore broadcast this evening at 8. Tomorrow morning at 11, we'll get another installment of our series looking at the Great American Songbook with director Adam Copeland. Tomorrow, we'll look at the work of Broadway lyricist Dorothy Fields. She knew what it was like to be in a boys' club. City Lights is a production of WABE at Public Broadcasting Atlanta. Our producers are Aaron Wright, Gabby Watts, and Mike Johns. Our engineer is Kevin Rinker. I'm Lois Reitzis. I'd love it if you'd follow me on Twitter at LoisReitzes. Follow the station at WABE News. Here and Now is coming your way next at 1 o'clock. Join Rose Scott for Closer Look. Thanks for joining us for City Lights and for listening to WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.